Welcome to the Between the Fur podcast, the show that allows professional mascot performers from the NBA and other pro sports to share their bizarre, funny and inspirational stories and give exclusive insight on what it's like behind the scenes and between the fur. Hosted by award-winning NBA mascot performer, Ken Solomon.
It's always great to connect with our listeners. So feel free to leave a review on iTunes or Spotify, and we'll read it on the next episode. Well, welcome back to Between the Fur. Thanks for joining us again, everybody. Today we have Tom Burgoyne, the mascot for the Phillies, the Philly Fanatic. Really looking forward to this one. One of my guys that I just look to for inspiration myself. So it is an awesome opportunity here. And we don't usually get to talk to people who are currently, you know, behind the mask. So this is a treat right here. But before we do, a little word from our sponsors. I like saying that. Here we go. This episode is sponsored by Burr Bottles. Dive into the world of Burr Bottles at burrbottles.com and witness the fusion of style and sustainability. Make your hydration count. Use code FURBUR for 25% off your order.
So, hey,
you sound very professional. Oh, very professional.
Yes, thank you. I try. Well, welcome, Tom. Appreciate you agreeing to be on here. You know, you just said something before we pressed record here that I'm really interested for you to say again here. You know, when you first started, you were telling me that the Phillies, they were kind of okay with Dave. And he was kind of the face and the voice and things like that being out there. Tell me what you just told me there.
Yeah, well, normally, Ken, first of all, thanks for having me on. This is great. Great to talk to you. You know, you're a legend too. So, you know what you've done with your career. So you are a legend. Did I say legend too? I'm not a legend.
Yes, you are. Yes, you are.
I'm not.
Whatever. But, yes, you are.
And it is funny because – Ken, when I do kind of interviews, you know, and in the Philadelphia market, I'm considered the best friend of the Philly Fanatic. And so we have a sports radio talk show in town. Every, you know, a couple times a year, they'll call me and I give them a little update on the Fanatic. And I always talk about the Fanatic in the third person.
Right.
But I thought, okay, well, this is a podcast. This is, you know, all about mascots, you know, kids, hopefully, you know, we'll put them to bed before we continue our interview and maybe we're pulling back the curtain a little bit.
Yes.
But you're right. You know, Ken, listen, I mean, the Fanatic's been around since 1978, you know, one of the earliest, you know, of its kind, right?
Unreal. Unreal.
You know, it's kind of got his start, you know, when our Phillies executives were in San Diego and they saw the chicken. You know, in the late 70s, and they came back and said, hey, you know, we should have our own mascot. And it really was, the Phillies were the first of their kind to create a mascot that was going to entertain the way we now know mascots entertain. And everything happened by accident. You know, there was no master plan in a lot of
all the good stuff does.
Yeah. Yeah, it really did. Including, okay, if somebody wants to interview the Fanatic or the guy underneath the fur, you know, there was no set plan in place. And it just so happened that Dave Raymond, who was the original performer as the Fanatic, Dave was just a outgoing guy, great in front of a camera. He actually had a dance show that played in the Philadelphia market. You know, he was a host of a dance show. He's like a Dick Clark, you know, American Bandstand type guy.
I did not know this.
Yeah, so Dave kind of had this, I think that kind of happened after maybe he got the Fanatic gig right around that same time. But Dave definitely was, you know, a good-looking guy, good in front of the camera. So I think the Phillies always recognized him as being an asset to be able to talk about the Fanatic. You know, hey, talk about my friend, the Fanatic. We always talk about him in the third person. So when I took over for Dave, it just kind of continued that. And so I'm considered best friend of the Fanatic and still do interviews and can talk in the third person. And I totally get, by the way, you know, characters and performers who don't want to reveal themselves and kind of go with that, you know, little wink, wink, nod, nod, I'm the friend. They just, I think a lot of teams like their performers not to be out in front of it. But I think it's great, Ken, because we can have a discussion, and there are a gazillion stories, you know, over, it's my 36th year, you know, so, you know, every day is a story. Every day something happens that, you know, you can be sitting around talking to somebody, you know, about how crazy it was.
Yeah. And, you know, that's the reason why I do this podcast, is so that these stories don't get lost. There's so much out there, and I haven't even scratched the surface with guys. You know, it's always like, hey, we'll have you back on to talk about more of those experiences. And it's just a bottomless pit of great stories, info, inspiration too. So really, what an opportunity.
I always think, you know, when we all are in our 90s and we're all at the mascot, you know, nursing home, we're all going to be wheeling around in our wheelchairs, and it'll just be nonstop stories till we die.
Oh, yeah. And inflated 10 times.
Yeah, of course.
Uh-huh. Of course. Yeah. Yeah. Remember when I broke my neck? And yeah. Well, you know, speaking of Dave Raymond and all that, you know, I'm interested to hear this, and I know that you've gotten this forever and ever and ever, but since you've never been on here, I wanted to ask you this. What was it like for you following him and coming into a character that was already established, because so many mascots do? At this point, the market's kind of saturated, and anybody that kind of breaks into is not breaking into, they're kind of following in somebody's footsteps. And that's, you know, kind of the issue where I'm at right now. And I see the struggles that the, you know, my guy is going through, and it has to be challenging. And for you, it had to be somewhat, you know, of a mountain to climb.
Yeah. The key was, I grew up in the Philadelphia area, grew up a huge Philadelphia sports fan, and as it turns out, a huge Fanatic fan. When he was introduced in 1978, I fell in love with him right away. I was in seventh, eighth grade in grade school. I was the class clown, you know. I'd run home and watch Three Stooges after, you know, every day after school, you know. But I also had this immense love for Philadelphia sports, and so I just would always zone in on the Fanatic when I'd go to a game. And my dad, I remember taking the family that first year the Fanatic came out, we invited the Chicken to the Vet Stadium, and the Fanatic and the Chicken met, and my dad knew how important was, you know, to me and my brothers and sisters. I mean, there we were up in the 700 level at the Vet watching, you know, there for that game in 1978. I remember the first time I met the Fanatic, you know, in the stands. You know, he gave me a big smooch, and I spit it out before he got a chance to spit it out, because I knew he'd do it, you know. So I always was this, you know, Fanatic fan. So I think that really helped me, I guess, specifically what you're asking in terms of the character was already established. And I think I really kind of knew it real well. When I went in for auditions and interviews, they videotaped everybody. I was only a mascot in high school. That was it. I wasn't a mascot in college. I sent in a resume to a PO box. It didn't say anything about the Phillies or the Fanatic. It just said, send a resume, mascots want it. And I was just looking for a few extra bucks. Thought maybe I'd be like the Hamburglar on the side of the road, or, you know, I always thought I was going to be like the Statue of Liberty person at tax time, like trying to get people to come into the tax office, right, something like that. And then when they called, it was for the Philly Fanatic job. It's like, wait, what? You know? And I auditioned and interviewed against guys who had mascot experience. I didn't. When they videotaped everybody, they told me they looked at the videotapes. They didn't know who was in the costume at the time, so they looked at these tapes pretty objectively, and they said, oh, yeah, yours was the best. Now, I didn't think that. When I was driving home, I was like, I can't believe I just had the Fanatic costume on. You know, how cool is this? But I didn't think. They said, no. And I just kind of had, you know, I think a pretty good understanding of the character and his personality, how he moves, right from the jump.
Ah, that's amazing. How was the reception for you? I mean, could people tell the difference? I mean,
so when I got hired, I got hired as Dave's backup. So I wound up handling a lot of the outside appearances. I started in 1989. Dave left after the 93 season, after the Phillies went to the World Series that year. So I took over for the 1994 season doing all the games. So that was a really interesting time, Ken. I mean, first of all, Phillies went to the World Series in October. I brought my oldest brother, Joe, up there. We had, you know, with the Phillies, charter a plane. We had the time of our lives. I got married in November. And then in December, the first weekend of December, Dave pulled me aside. We were at an appearance together. And he said, Tom, I'm getting ready to move on. He started his own company. And, you know, I was going to be the main guy, meaning I'm going to start doing now all the games and the travel, you know, some of the travel and everything we had in place. But that the word got out in the Philadelphia area on the news. You know, it was big news that Dave was leaving, and rightfully so, because, you know, he had done such a great job establishing, you know, the popularity of the Fanatic. Everybody loved the Fanatic. So when it got out, there was a microscope on me for sure. You know, there were articles written, is the new guy going to be good enough? You know, all that kind of stuff. I'd been working, you know, on game days, working with Dave, working in our scoreboard room. I knew a lot of the writers, and, you know, even the previews were like, hey, everybody settle down. You know, Tom's good. You know, he's good. So, but it still was, I had to kind of prove myself. And I do remember 1994 opening day, going out there, kind of have a calmness about it. Like, no, I think I got this. And there were some articles written after that game and after the first couple games, like reviews on how I was doing. And generally they were pretty good. I didn't get trashed by anybody. So I always just thought it was just the greatest compliment anybody could give me when they would say, hey, that transition was so smooth that we never would have known that, you know, there was a change there. So to me, you know, Dave's the greatest. I learned from the best. And whenever people, you know, say that and still say it to this day, you know, some of the fans who've been around for that long remember that time. It's really a compliment that, you know, people didn't see a change.
That's awesome. Yeah, what an amazing transition. And the way they handled that, I think was pretty spot on. You know, I've seen others take a different direction, and it's been pretty rough. But yeah, now that sounds amazing. Let me ask you a couple other things. What in your time, since you've seen a lot, and I'm, this comes from the NBA, where, you know, it seems like mascots are a little bit more involved, but also more, I don't know, scrutinized or under the microscope or whatever. So there's been many rules that have changed for us over the years, having to do with players or refs, or, you know, where we can be, and, you know, no longer can we stand on the rim during a game, you know, can't get on the score
table.
The
nerve of these legs, right? To keep you from standing on a rim.
Come on. I mean, no more walking on the score table and doing a backflip off. Right. Come on.
Right.
So what are some of the rules? Has there been any that, first of all, a mascot or you have caused, or it's they've just said, hey, yeah, this mascot thing's gotten out of control, we need to reel it back?
I think what started to happen too, Ken, is, and you know it, you kind of mentioned it, you know, the proliferation of mascots. And so now everybody has a mascot. In 1978, it was the Chicken and the Fanatic, you know, and eventually Yuppie, and then Fred Bird, and, you know, they all started, you know, coming from a baseball standpoint. And then certainly we had Big Shot in Philadelphia, who was such a great, great mascot. But I know in baseball in particular, now everybody's got a mascot. Now, back when it was just the Fanatic, the umpires knew the Fanatic. They knew Dave. Dave did a great job of cultivating those relationships with players and with umpires.
Mm-hmm. And he did half of that was in person.
Yes. Yes. Yeah, you get to know him, you know, with the umpires, you'd always give him free stuff, you know, but that always helps. But they would come to Philadelphia and know, like, oh, the Fanatic, you know, and there was a trust factor there. Now with everybody and everybody having a mascot, these umpires, players, you know, but umpires in particular, don't know who's in the costume. They don't know the level of professionalism. They don't know if they're going to make them look bad. So at some point in baseball, the umpire association basically told their umpires, you're not allowed to mess around with, you know, a mascot unless they prearrange it with you. And that's always a bummer, Ken, because
Oh, no.
part of the fun is sneaking up on one of these guys and just getting a reaction, you know, getting that reaction and not have it be too scripted. But so I started seeing that a lot. And to this day now, umpires sometimes are really kind of nervous and will think twice before they engage the Fanatic.
I speaking of that, I don't know if you know who Dick Bavetta is or was in.
Sure.
So Dick
Of course.
Bavetta, oh my gosh. Great ref, understood that this was entertainment. And one of my things used to be flipping over dancers. So I'd line them up, hands and knees, or, you know, whatever. And I'd add to them, go and flip over them. And one day I'm about to go flip over them. And I look just before I start to run. And while I was running back, Dick Bavetta goes and gets at the end of the line. And I'm like, oh, he's right where I'm gonna
Yeah, he's taking a
land.
chance.
Yeah, I'm like, I actually ran over there, like, whoa, 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 whoa. Dick, why don't you come right around here to the front of the line? So he put him over there. And you know, for a few years there, he would inevitably jump in there or jump in the middle or whatever. And you know,
You
those
gotta
guys,
love
I
it.
mean, back in the day, it was a little bit more, I always say this, a little bit more Wild West. You could just kind of, you know, go with the flow and have some fun and have some spontaneity and everything. But even the referees nowadays are so scrutinized on, you know, anything and
Yeah, a
everything.
little
And
bit of a fun killer. And as far as other rules, Ken, like you know, some of the, I guess recently, obviously baseball's put in a lot of rules to speed up the game. So that has shortened our time, you know, to be out on the field. And you know, I know you know, NBA, certainly it's almost like every stoppage, you know, you can have entertainment on the field. In baseball, it's only one inning. Between one inning, it's when our ground crew's out there. There's only one time that entertainment is allowed to be on the field for a MLB game. And you know, they've shortened that down. You have to be off the field at a certain time. So it makes it really challenging. Thankfully, Fanatic, you know, always has his four-wheeler. It gets him out there pretty quick. But you know, there are days we're trying to get a 20-team kid dance group on the field to dance, you know, dance for a minute and then do something funny, hopefully, and then get them off the field. So it's been a little bit more of a challenge with the clock.
Oh, I'm sure. With that, I was going to ask you, do you have a set time that you can do something on the field? Or do you have a set time during the game where you're, you know, on the dugout or whatever? Do they designate a certain time for you every game, or is it every five games, or what's your schedule there?
Ken, the amazing thing is, and Dave and I talk about this all the time. And when he comes and he watches the Fanatic, it's always neat to get his perspective. Like when his kids were younger, he'd bring his kids, and it's like, oh my God, this is so cool to see the Fanatic and the Phillies. But we always talk about it. I say, Tom, and I know this for a fact, it's been the same. We've had that same framework almost from 1978 till now, 45 years or so of the same framework, which is the Fanatic comes out on the field before the game. Always a great time to, you know, kind of establish, win over the crowd. You know, you do something with a player or something on the field, it can really, you know, set the tone for the night. So I always love, and that is where it can still be a little Wild West out there, Ken. You know, I hear what you're saying. We've lost some of that, I think. But in the pregame, when you can mess with the players and do some other things, you know, that is a fun time of the night. And then the Fanatic's in the crowd in the third inning for the most part. He's on the field at the end of the fifth inning. And then he's on top of the dugout at the end of the seventh inning for a dance. Other times, might have some visits to make and up to, certain sponsors you have to visit. But generally, that's the framework. Like third, fifth, seventh hasn't really changed. So
And
we just feel like it works best.
what I love about that is that people can count on, they get in a routine too. Season ticket holders and even those who just, come to the occasional game but are, somewhat regularly there, get to where they count on, or hey, we got to stay in our seats because I
Yeah,
know,
for
if they
sure.
don't know exactly, they'll be like, yeah, this is coming up soon, so stay in your seat so
Yeah.
we can see that,
Yeah, for sure.
I used to do a big intro at every game. I used to rappel in, and I'd have people say, we would run from our car, like, oh my gosh, he's about to rappel, and just booking it in to get in their seat. And we've kind of gotten away from that, but luckily enough, we have not fallen into the same groove as a lot of teams, pulling their mascot time to fill it with sponsorship. So, luckily I always had the first quarter break and people could count on that. It was also a great thing for me because I could count on when the clock rolls down, they can call a timeout anytime, but when the clock rolls down to the end of the quarter, I can count on that timing for me. That was great though.
No, and I think you're right. Fans appreciate that. They know when it's coming and when to look forward to it.
And it's
So
a
absolutely, there's a
tradition.
lot.
It's tradition. It's routine. Even though we want to shake things up as much as we can as entertainers, there's some things that just work, right?
Ken, you're so right about that. I mean, we're getting ready for baseball season, and this is the time of year I'm always really on edge because I just want to come out with a few new ideas that I can kind of blend into to what we already have. But you're right. Like, I will always ask around, like, guys, is this still working? Like, is this getting old? I mean, fifth inning, Fanatics always, you know what I mean? Like, and I'm always looking like maybe I should, in the fifth inning, do more like in the crowd or up on our rooftop. Maybe there's a staging area. I should be up there more, but it always comes back to now people like seeing the Fanatic at these times on the field, on the dugout, and of course I'm and that time where you wander around the in the crowd. I've always thought that's just a big part of it. Makes the Fanatic look like the everyman. He's out there in the bleachers, just hanging, waiting for home run balls like everybody else. He's doing his thing. He's filling popcorn. I mean, that's a big part of the Fanatic act. So you have to allot that time too.
Let me ask you about that. My assistant, for a lot of years, Scott Strait, he would always say, "Hey, man, dude, your best stuff is in the crowd." I mean, honestly, he's like, "Look, everybody loves your skits. Everybody loves, when you pull a prank or a stunt or something like that. But your best stuff, people are glued out on you when you're walking through the crowd." He goes,
I
"You
love your
know."
highlight. I love the highlight films from Denver. Oh my God, the cruising down the steps and I know everybody does the popcorn thing, but you guys do it better than anybody. It's great.
Oh man, what a good time. And I love for my for me, I love working a crowd. Just the spontaneity, the what's gonna happen, who's gonna say something, how can I react the best, just those moments of even the angry moments, sit down, get out of my, I can't see the game,
Agreed. I'm with you there.
Those were my most fun moments. Is that for you as well?
I
Or
tend to
is it
agree with
skits?
you.
Or is it, what is it for you?
I like the now it's changed a little bit. I generally am totally with you. I love being in with the crowd, the spontaneity of it, the fun of it. It's changed since the advent of the dreaded cell phone camera.
Right?
I'm sure on every podcast when you talk to guys,
Yes,
everybody
what's the
talks about
worst part of,
Yeah. So it's really taken away from, particularly at a game where, I think the Fanatic used to do a lot more with, the vendors or just with fans, setting up little spontaneous skits with fans, because you can't, because people are always running down the steps and they want to get that picture.
Yeah,
And
get that
so,
selfie, get that selfie, get that selfie.
yeah. So that part of it has changed. Yeah, it really has.
So on that note, I realized that a few years ago and I saw something that Bodwin did that kind of helped a little bit in, not
What
overall,
did he do?
but
What did he
it was
do?
brilliant. It was brilliant. I totally ripped that off. He came out with a shirt. And whenever I did, I loved it. I'm like, well, I love how Robert, I talked to him about it one day and he's like, yeah, I just decided to lean into it. I'm like, brilliant. Yeah. So come out with a shirt that says, I hate cell phone cameras. And basically, and I literally ripped this off. Come out and this, t-shirt on, big bold letters. And then you look up at the crowd like, ah, here we go. Just that whole shrug of, all right, bring it. But you'd look up and everybody was like, oh my gosh, oh my gosh. I gotta get a picture of that. I gotta get, and then it was like swarm. Yeah, everybody had to get a picture with that. No, I can't see the shirt. I can't. Go ahead. Yep. You done? All right, here we go.
That's
So,
great.
yeah,
That is a good one.
you could kill a lot of time and spend a lot of time in one spot without moving much.
Well, can I, I'll take the I what I try to think of, and I think we as performers, we all have to think this way too. They can be a good thing in that they take that picture. That picture
Oh,
can
yeah.
be the mean the world to people,
Yep.
It could wind up over a mantle somewhere on somebody's, as their screensaver. It could be, a picture in with a coffin. I've certainly heard my share of, oh yeah, we buried my dad with that his picture of the Fanatic when he was with the Fanatic. So from that, I try to think of that when I'm in the middle of trying to do something semi-creative and somebody just wants a selfie. But having that moment and having that moment captured. It can be really special for people.
Absolutely. Love that. And we have to remember that as
Yeah.
performers. And let me
As
ask
hard
you,
as
oh,
it is.
yeah. So let me ask you another question. What's your biggest, what would you say, what would you put your finger on as your biggest screw up?
Oh.
Let's get to that.
Biggest every
Biggest
day.
screw up.
I always tell
It's
people,
like
I say
every
it's the
day.
old It's the ultimate job. You can screw up and nobody, everybody thinks it's funny and they laugh and but you know what? I'll say this. This is it's funny because I just read an old clipping yesterday. I came across an old file and in terms of well, screw up in terms of like getting in trouble, I guess. J.D. Drew, if you remember him, he was a baseball player we drafted. He didn't want to come to Philadelphia, so he did all this slimy stuff to avoid being signed, including giving like the wrong address for us to send the contract to get signed. And so when the deadline came and went, he said, "Oh, I never got the contract," and it was just really, really bad stuff. So he went back into the draft. Got redrafted. He's now playing for when he was playing for the Cardinals, and he came to Philadelphia. And
Who would want him
listen,
after something like that? I mean,
exactly. Well, of course. And then coming to Philadelphia, for his first time, people were ready to lynch this guy.
right.
And I did something I shouldn't have done. And I never have taken the tact of the money that players make in professional sports. I've never gone down that road, but in this instance, it just seemed right. So we had three sacks that, if you can picture Wile E. Coyote, or a cartoon where they have the money on a big, pillowcase. We had, I had a guy who made a big prop, a TNT plunger, like again, Roadrunner, let's blow up the Roadrunner. And I came out. It's before the game. It was just after the national anthem. I set this thing up, three bags right in front of the dugout. I set a little fuse. The Fanatic is now behind his four-wheeler, getting ready to lure J.D. Drew out of the dugout to grab the money, because money was a part of this whole reason he didn't
I
sign.
I see where
blah,
you're
blah,
going
blah.
With this. I love it.
So, yeah, so Coach Renee Lachman came out, grabbed the money bags, and, you know, stormed back in. And here, apparently, the Fanatic never got the menu – the memo, because our president at the time had sent out something saying, hey, we got to take care of J.D. Drew, extra security, no funny songs like take the money and run. I am gonna let them know he's gonna be in good hands. And then he looks out on the field and sees me you know, doing this. The timing wasn't so good. So I remember I had a 25-year lunch they had in honor of me being with the Phillies for 25 years. This was 10 years ago. But I remember telling that story to some of our young, you know, at the luncheon with some of our younger employees who didn't know. And I said, yeah, I almost got fired that day. Well, our now president stood up and said, no, you did get fired. I had to get your job back.
No,
so like that night, they're like, Burgoyne's done. And the guy, he was kind of his right hand man at the time, calmed him down and, you know, got my job back.
Oh my gosh. That is classic. That is classic. Wow. I'm sure there's been a few on my end where my boss has had to, actually I know there's been quite a few where my boss has had to step in and go, no, let's just everybody take a deep breath.
Well, Ken, but, you know, if you're not getting your hand slapped every once in a while, you're not doing your job.
Exactly.
You know? It's part
exactly.
of the job.
And I've actually used that in arguments, not arguments, in rebuttals or whatever, saying, hey, look, you guys pay me to walk the line here. Sometimes that line is shifting a little bit, and either I didn't get the memo or, you know, we there has to be some kind of allowance there. You know, I have a good track record and I always walk the line and I'm usually on this side, but come on. So,
Ken, you know, when people ask me, what's the key, whether it's the success of the Fanatic or just mascots in general, you know, for their clubs, and trust is the biggest thing. And that's what you're just alluding to, you know, the club has to put their trust in you, and mm-hmm. You have to be smart enough and have common sense. So we say a good mascot has to have common sense, one, and then a good performer. But I mean, I think you just have to know what that line is. We're going to skirt it a little bit, but to just put their trust in you. When it comes to people ask, oh, where you come up with your ideas, you guys, and it's like for all our skits, like they just, I don't have to run it through anybody. In the playoffs, I do. When the playoffs come along, MLB takes over a little bit. And so I have to clear routines through MLB. But for the most part, the Phillies trust me that I'm not going to do anything rude or crude. I'm not going to disrupt the game. We're going to keep it good, clean, family fun. And they let me do my thing, Ken. And I think any successful mascot program, that's where it all starts. It just hire the right person and then let them do their thing.
Thank you. I'm so glad you mentioned that and you put it just right. I have talks with my boys almost daily, and it does boil down to the conversation of trust. You know, because, you know, both my boys are in the business now, and or two of my boys are in the business now. I have to be careful how I say that because my producer, Cade, over here. However, he's my youngest.
That is great, by the way.
Right.
I love that they're joining. They're following dad's footsteps.
Yeah.
I have three boys. I said, no, there's only one mascot per family. I think that's all we can handle. You know? It's
right.
It's like a dog. We only have one dog. It's like, hey, dad, let's get a second dog back in the day. I'm like, no, we're one dog down. Now it's like, we're only one mascot family. I think that's all we can take.
That's right. Go be a doctor.
Yeah, and I might have told you, my son's a gymnast at the University of Oklahoma. So people always ask me, like, oh, is he going to be a mascot? Is he going to be an NBA guy doing the flips? I'm like, one mascot per family rule.
Right, right. I asked Bob Wolf that too. I'm like, you got a boy that's, you know, getting, he's like, no, not going to happen.
They're smarter than I am. They knew they weren't going to get into this business.
Right.
Know?
Well, my,
much and, too smart.
Yeah. My two older boys are like, you know, well, we're going to, you know, see how far we can, you know, they loved growing up in it. So they're like, yeah, let's, you know, see. Now then here's my youngest, and everyone is like, hey, so are you going to jump in? You know, what where are you going to go? What, you're going to be in costume, right? You're going to be, he's like, I'm good. He's just, nope, I'm good.
See, he's the smart one. Right? No offense, Cade, I know you're in there somewhere, but no, Cade, you're doing the right thing.
But. Thank you.
Yes. I'll tell you what, though, there's nobody better behind the scenes than this guy, right? So he helps.
There you go, Cade.
Yeah.
I'll see you in the nursing home in 20 years, Cade. We'll talk stories.
Yeah. Boy, he's the guy that makes us look good. So
nice. Yeah.
Okay, so another question for you. So we've talked about your biggest screw up. Yeah. Here, so next up, give me your best. Doesn't have to be the best, because people always ask me, you know, what's your best moment, or what's the greatest thing you've ever done, or what's, you know, what's your favorite, you know, what's your highlight? Yeah. I'm like, man, that's
tough.
Know, what area? Let's fine tune.
Did the Nuggets ever win when you guys? I know they just won last year, but did you guys have a championship when you were doing your thing?
So, I can't really talk about this yet, so I'm gonna kind of bleep this out.
Yeah, for sure.
That
real closure for you, first of all, closure, but also just to experience, you know, the intensity. And then you mentioned the word parade, you know, and when I think about my, you know, that's an easy one for me, because in Philadelphia, when you win a professional sports championship, you parade down Broad Street. It's a straight, if you've never been to Philadelphia, it's the longest, like, straightest street in America, and it just cuts right from North Philly right through Center City right down to South Philly, where all the complexes are. But started with the Flyers, were the first one to have a Broad Street parade, the Broad Street Bullies in the mid-70s, and then 1980 the Phillies won, 1983 the Sixers, and of course I'm at these parades as a kid. Quick story, I in 1980 I went to the parade. There's this statue right at City Hall where they go down Broad Street and you got to go around City Hall and then continue down. I was on top of a statue in 1980 with a couple buddies. And sure enough, a couple days later, the Philadelphia Inquirer had put out a supplement, a color supplement about the run through the playoffs and the parade pictures, you know, pictures, yeah, small articles. And on the back page, the back cover, was an 8x10 color picture of the statue that I'm on top of. So when I went in for that audition, that interview I told you about, I brought that with me to say, that's me, you know, on top of the statue. And so now you fast forward to 2008, we win the World Series. Fanatic is in the lead truck, leading the way, you know, just, you know, 2 million, two and a half million people, however many people were there. And just the, you know, a surreal experience. And I remember looking over at that statue. There were some kids up there now that you got kids up there now. And, you know, I'm on the other side of it. So forget about it, Ken. It was storybook.
Oh,
you know, it was great.
Man, what just a surreal moment.
Yeah, it was. It was awesome.
I love that. Guy, soak that in. That's so cool. Yeah. Man. Wow, you were destined for this, man. You were on a path. I love that.
Yeah, it's funny. Let me tell you a quick story about that too, because I do, now that I look back, Ken, I do feel that a little bit. Like, you know, I think even in high school, guys, you know, we had a new mascot costume. The whole high school basically said, Tom Burgoyne's going to be, it's got to be the guy. Like, he's the guy to do it. And just kind of how my life was going. And when I got the job after that interview with the Phillies, I go into the bank That day, later that day, I go into our just little town bank, and I know the woman who works at the bank. And I said, "Hi, Mrs. Doherty, how you doing?" She goes, "Hi, Tommy, how you doing?" I'm good, good. What's new? I'm like, "Well, you'll never believe it. I just got a new job." And this is no lie. She said, out of the blue, "Don't let me guess. You're going to be the next Philly Fanatic." And yeah, well, it's not like it was in the news, but she guessed it, you know. So it's like, I do think of, you know, what you're meant to do on this earth when you're here, you know, destiny, things you love to do, you hope you're gonna do, when you get older and you don't have a real job. It's just you're doing something you love to do. So I do feel like, you know, this kind of was my path. I was meant to do it. I
Wow.
got lucky. I got very lucky, though.
I think you were very blessed. I mean, that was something that was just handed to you. What a miracle in your life. And I'm all about blessings and miracles. So I, man, that is amazing. Amazing.
Awesome.
What a great story. There's so much there and there's a lot, so much history. Let me ask you, we're going to wrap this up here soon, but let me ask you one last question. If you could be something other than human, what would that be?
Other than human, huh? Wow.
Cade's over here. What the? So
It's like a, if you were a tree, what kind of tree would it
I'm just playing with you because no one knows what the fanatic is.
I didn't mean to get, and I didn't listen again. I didn't mean to get too cerebral or too loosey goosey.
Same here.
Listen.
I'm just playing with you because it's just always like, what's that character? I'm like, it's the fanatic.
Well, you know, and part of, you know, it is funny because I don't know how much longer I want to still keep performing. I love it. Love, what I've been doing. It has opened up some doors. I've written some books. I do public speaking. But I wrote a book, this last one called Feel the Love. I wrote it with a guy who is coaches executives and works with companies on their culture, and it's a leadership book, and it's a little bit about doing what you love to do, so those topics are things that I talk about a lot when I do my keynotes, and when I'm done as the Fanatic, I sure hope to have a role in the organization, in the front office, but I also want to continue, doing my talks, and I really do enjoy, telling the stories, and I think there's a lot we can gain, Ken. As you know, being that guy behind the fur, there's just a perspective that we get that people don't get. So it is kind of nice to be able to talk about it, and I think it's interesting to people, you know?
It definitely is. And that's, I mean, I've gotten such a great response with this podcast, I've been able to reach some people that I don't think I would have, just in costume, obviously, but people are so interested and I get questions and all that. If you're listening, by the way, I'm going to put this out there. If you do have questions, if you have questions for Tom, if you have questions for me, yeah, shoot me a message and yeah, I'll answer them on the next episode. But so Tom, let me ask you this. I know that you're a keynote speaker. You've written some books. Tell me a little bit about that real quick and how people can get a hold of you.
That's pretty
Website, what?
awesome. Yeah, it's awesome, Ken. How this job has opened up some doors. I wrote a couple books about the Philadelphia Phillies, the 1993 team, 2004 team. But I wrote a book a few years ago called "Feel the Love." As I mentioned, it's how the most powerful force in the universe builds great companies. So it's really got it's kind of geared towards the corporate audience. How to be a good leader. The basic premise is, everybody loves the Fanatic, and what company or organization wouldn't want their clients or their customers to generate have that kind of love, for their product and their service, their company, as people have for the Fanatic? Like, can that be duplicate it.
Yeah, and translate so, it into.
Yeah. And so we came up with kind of seven fun principles, you know, the big smooch, you know, you got to love them first, you know, a bunch of principles. And so, yeah, the book's done well. And then I've gone out and done a lot of keynotes. I have a website, tomburgoyne.com. If people want to reach out to me, they can reach out to me on LinkedIn as well. But it's been, I really love it, Ken. I mean, again, you know, we have a job where we're not allowed to talk, you know, and, you know, to be able to have this other part of my life where not only talk and tell fun fanatic stories, but really the message I really, really believe in, you know, to be able to go to work every day and enjoy it. How to be a leader, how to, you know, we have great leadership at the Phillies. I just would want to knock down a door for them, you know, all the time. We get treated well. And
for
that's
a mascot,
what the book's about.
That's great. Have to say, for a mascot to say that about their management and things like that, that says a lot. So, congratulations on that. Congratulations to the Phillies. That's amazing.
Yeah, I mean,
I get together with mascots all the time, and they're like, you know, my company this, and my, you know, they treat me bad, you know.
Yeah, I know. And I talk to guys, and sometimes I try to talk to their bosses and say, listen, you know, we talked about it. Trust is important. Trust your guy. You have a great guy here. You got to trust him to go out and entertain fans. It's not rocket science. You got a good person, and he's not going to embarrass you. And that's where it starts. And then, you know, hopefully, you know, things fall into place, and everybody wants to be treated well and treated with kindness and not taken advantage of. And unfortunately, I think in our business, Ken, a lot of guys get taken advantage of, you know, so just from a work standpoint, you know, I've been fortunate enough to be able to do this for a long time, raise three kids. I don't think I've missed too much. I've missed some baseball games and some soccer games when they were growing up. But you need to have that work-life balance. And, you know, when they expect you to do, you know, 15 appearances on a Saturday, you know, that can be a little tough. So I think the Phillies have always kind of appreciated, you know, that we have lives outside of, you know, our work. So I think it's a good message.
That's great. That's great. That was really good to hear. It's refreshing, actually. Yeah.
Great.
Is there anything you would like to say at the end of this? Is there any points, words of wisdom?
Words of wisdom. You're only young once, but you can be immature forever.
Where's my mic?
Wait, where's my microphone to drop?
Yeah, it's right here.
There it is. Yeah.
All right, man. Hey.
All right, Ken. Thanks for having me. It was real blast. Thanks.
Yeah, you're welcome. Thanks for being on here. Talk to you soon.
You got it.
Thank you for listening. And now you know that there is a person inside there, a living, breathing human with emotions and feelings. If you would like your friends and family to know what is between the fur, please share. See you next time on Between the Fur.